Okay, thank you everyone for coming. Looks like we have a great turnout today. Let's start out. So this is multi-language websites, SharePoint 2013, SPC 129, if this is not your session. Well, make sure you enjoy this. So I'm Josh Stickler.
I'm Kate Kelly.
I'm a program manager on the SharePoint team, and I'm focusing on the variations feature. And so we're getting started. So just to get started, how many of you have used variations for multilingual sites in the past? Okay,
whoa.
Great many of you, awesome. How many of you have used other solutions for multilingual scenarios in the past on SharePoint? Okay, so a couple of you there too, great. Well, throughout this session, if you have any questions or ideas or things like that, please tweet at the session, it's SPC129, but let's get started. So just as a level set, a vast majority have used variations in the past, but for any of you who haven't, or any of you who want to hear it straight from us, what do we see as the variations feature? Well, it's a couple things. It's a feature that enables you to manage content in a variety of different languages. It lets you sync that content. It manages the creation and syncing of that content across different languages. So you can start out with content in English US. We have one source, or language of your choice. We have one source, and content created there is then copied to one or many targets. So as you update that content, you can either publish it and have it go down, or you can manually kick that off and send it out yourself. The other thing is, so as you add additional content, you can sync that content, and there's a variety of different knobs you have available to determine, you know, where it goes, when it goes, things like that. Okay? One of the main things, and the main thing that I'd like you to take away from this that we'll start out with, is that variations is now focused on multilingual scenarios. In the past, we've talked about variations kind of in the abstract, where we'd say, okay, you could use variations for different mobile renditions of your site. Or you could use variations for different brands, for example. But we now have very dedicated features for those scenarios. So we have the device channels feature that you might have heard about in previous sessions that allow you to target specific devices. And we have the cross-site publishing feature, which enables you to have different brand sites and generally reuse content throughout your SharePoint deployment. And so there were other sessions on that. You can check out the videos. I highly recommend them. But now we're exclusively focused on multilingual. There's another feature that people often think about when they think about multilingual scenarios, and that's MUI, or the multilingual user interface feature. So what that is, that enables you to switch out the SharePoint Chrome, things like the ribbon, things like site settings links. That's just generally the SharePoint language. And that's language files coming from us. But when we think about variations, we're typically thinking about user-generated content. Content created by your authors, content that you want your consumers to read. And so that's the general differentiation between those two. So let's talk a little bit about what's new in variations.
So the first thing we've done in 2013 is we've deeply integrated machine translation and human translation capabilities into variations.
Another thing that we've done, we've increased the breadth, scale, and speed. So we've made a variety of improvements around performance, server citizenship, scalability, and just the types of content that we'll propagate.
We've also updated the way you can sync content across between source and target. So you can now designate different syncing options on a target-by-target basis.
And then we also have integrated, we have a great story around integrating with search-driven publishing, the cross-site publishing feature, a lot of these things that you've heard about through a variety of other sessions throughout this conference. And so at the end, we'll talk about how we fit into the larger picture of search-driven sites. So variations at the speed of business. We'll start to dive into some of these performance, reliability, scale improvements. So when we're thinking about variations as in terms of how fast it moves, we've actually made creating a new label about twice as fast. And we get some economies of scale here. The larger the amount of content that you're propagating, we're actually now exporting in bulk. Previously, we'd export each individual item one at a time. We do a variety of other operations when we're exporting items to send them to other targets. But now when we're creating a new language, we'll actually take a bunch of different things, and we actually break it out into a variety of different work items. So previously, when you thought of variations, there was this create hierarchy's monolithic timer job that was typically a very long-running operation. If you imagine, for example, you've been using variations for a year, you've created, aggregated a bunch of content and in your source label, and now it's time to expand into a new market, expand into a new subsidiary or something like that. You'd have to actually create a new label, and all of that content would be copied over in a single work item. And if that failed, you might have to delete it all and start over again, which would be a time-consuming process. In SharePoint 2013, if something goes wrong, we've made ourselves a lot more reentrant. We actually break this out into a variety of work items. And you can just pick up where you left off once you resolve that issue. The other thing we've done, you can actually create a lot more content. So we've heard a lot of feedback about this, that in the past we've talked about, okay, 50 labels is the maximum of what you could create on premises, and variations was not available in Office 365. Now variations is available in Office 365. On premises, you can create up to 209 labels. That's potentially one label for every locale that's supported by SharePoint. So you can dramatically increase the number of labels that you have. And on Office 365, we're keeping around that 50 label limit, but now variations is available.
So as we planned for SharePoint 2013, we talked to a number of customers. And we're going to talk through the entire presentation referring to a customer that's based off of some of the most common feedback we heard from folks. I'd like to introduce you to Contoso. Contoso is a multinational corporation that has business in the United States and France. So they're a multilingual company. They have a public-facing website that they've built on a previous version of SharePoint using variations that manages their English and French content. Contoso is about to make two major changes. They're going to expand into the Canadian market, so they're now going to have more market content that they need to manage. And they're looking to upgrade to SharePoint 2013. They want to take advantage of some things like the translation capability we've added, and they're interested in changing their syncing story.
The other thing that Contoso is really concerned about is ensuring that they have great search engine optimization. Because this is a public-facing website that they're building, they want to ensure that people, not just from their home market, but from a variety of their subsidiary markets, are able to visit localized versions of their site and find them on search engines like Bing and Google. And to that end, they want something like a country code top-level domain. So in this case, they have contoso.com, but they also want contoso.fr. So that's something that's pretty important for them, too. Okay. So when talking with a bunch of customers, one of the main things that we've heard was there's not one size that fits all. And so to that end, we've designed variations to be a little bit more flexible to meet the realities of multinational businesses, multilingual businesses. And so we kind of identified two main patterns of organizations when it comes to multilingual content. One of them we're calling the centralized control organization. This is an organization that typically has a very strong central marketing group that's creating a bunch of content that should apply to all locales. So they're creating content that is very important to be translated everywhere, or most everywhere. And when they update that content, those updates are important for everyone to consider and typically translate as well. The other one that we've heard of is distributed control. So in that case, subsidiaries or locales have a lot more discretion over what they should do with localized content. And localized content doesn't, or content for localization doesn't necessarily need to go to every market. So you might create some content in your source that might only need to go to Asia Pacific or may only apply to Europe. So you only want to send it to a couple places. And once you've sent it there, once you update the source content, they may or may not need to change it, right? So if you have, for example, just a spelling change or something specific to your home market, that might not need to go everywhere. And so we've created some configurations that enable both of these options. And you're never locked into one, so you can change it anytime. And each market can have a unique configuration. So you could have one where you're saying, OK, I'm always going to push content out into this market. But in this other market, I'm going to give them some flexibility as to whether or not they want to opt into certain updates that I've created.
So going back to our Contoso example for a moment, Contoso, as they're building out their Canadian website for the first time, might want to use a centralized model where they push all of the content that they want to that Canadian market. But once that website is ready to go and they're ready to hand over day-to-day operations to a local group that's going to run the site, they can move to the distributed model. So now that local group can look through the content that's coming from the United States site and decide what makes the most sense for their market.
So let's take a little look at the getting started experience for variations. So in this case, like we said, Contoso has been using variations for a while now. They're in the French market and they're getting ready to expand. And so let's just take a look at what they'd see when they start out. So here's the variation labels UI. And we can see that we have a number of labels already set up. But I'm just going to go into one and call a couple of things out here. So we've broken this out into a number of steps because there are a number of new things that you can do here. First and foremost, you can translate the content. So we've made it possible for you to define what languages are available for translation. So in this case, since this is the French label, we've enabled two things. One, we've said, okay, you can connect this site with Microsoft Translator, and so you can export all of the content in the site and send it out there. And then also we've made it possible to export a translation package if you want to send that to a translation vendor or human agency. A couple of other things, target label behavior. This is what I was talking about, or this is one of the aspects of distributed versus centralized control. So we could say, okay, when I create new content, does that go everywhere automatically? Or can users manually say, okay, I do want this one, I don't want that one, things like that. And so you can review all of this stuff and then finish, and then you would create hierarchies. We've already done that in this case. But you can also then go into variation settings. A lot of these things should be familiar if you've used variations in the past, but I just wanted to highlight that we have these two modes here. When I create new content, does it go everywhere? When I create new content, does it go only to markets that I want? Are there any questions so far on just this getting started stuff? Okay, and we'll have time for questions at the end. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about what types of content variations propagates. So we've gotten a lot of feedback about this in the past, where variations was a very page-centric feature. We would talk about the page as the vehicle of propagation. In the past, if you had resources, we had this copy resources setting, where you could have things like images, documents, linked into a page. And when you propagated that page, if a library with the same name existed on the target, we would copy those items in the target as well. So you could have like white papers, documents, things like that. Now, in SharePoint 2013, we realized that you might, for example, want to update that document, but you had no changes to make to the underlying page that it was linked in. So in this case, you can sync the list independently. When you update that list item, it'll go into the target list, and it'll just sync on its own. The other thing to keep in mind here is that this now supports general lists instead of only libraries. So items that were shown in a page, for example, in a content query web part or content search web part, that wasn't actually linked into the page as far as we were concerned in the past. But now, because the list syncs independently, things like announcements lists, document libraries, just general generic lists will sync on their own.
So talking about Contoso again, they have a news content query web part on their homepage that surfaces upcoming announcements for the company. In the past, they would have had to create this list on the target and manually copy content between the source and the target before they could publish that news. With SharePoint 2013, they can actually propagate the content from their news announcements list on the source to all of their targets and then translate in the targets.
So let's show that. Okay, so here is the homepage of our first site. It's very Spartan. So we have a content query web part on this page. We have a couple of list items in here. This is coming from an announcements list. Just go there, company news. And so I'm going to create a new item in the source list. Let's create this, add a title, add some content. Okay. And so I'm going to save this. And now I can approve this item. Or if I didn't want to approve it, I could also independently update it. So we have a new variations tab for lists. And so I could go in here and say, OK, I want to update all targets. That way I don't have to necessarily publish this item on the source or approve it on the source so that it's available to anonymous users before it's been translated in other markets. So this kind of lets me have a wider, indefinite time frame for translation. OK, so while that's going out there, we'll take a look at the French site. So here we have a translated French site. We have a similar content query web part here. And the item is going to come over here. And like I mentioned before, the item isn't linked into or embedded in the page. It's just showing up because of a content query. So if we just give this a moment, we now see that, our item has propagated over. And it's now there. So we can also translate it. The other thing we have here is a document. Did you want to talk about that? Okay. So we have this document. It's the Contoso Vacation and Sick Leave Policy. This is just a Word document with a bunch of rich formatting, tables, good stuff like that. And here you can see our list item has also been translated. Awesome. I'm going to go into this library, and I'll find my sick leave policy. And this document has come over from the English-US source. It's time for me to translate that. So I'm also going to send this out to machine translation. So I can send the specific item out. And so what this is doing, it's exporting this out into XML, sending it to the machine translation service, bringing it back. And what we should see in a moment is that the document has been updated. We'll have the rich text formatting preserved, tables preserved, things like that. So let's just open this. And you can see, voila, it's all been translated. Looks pretty consistent.
So any questions about that before we continue? The question is if this is using the online translation service. It is. It's connecting to Microsoft Translator. The follow-up question is there a license? Is it free? How does it work? So right now, out of the box in SharePoint 2013, it just connects to Microsoft Translator. It has a there's a throttling limit that's fairly high, but we can talk about that in more detail. And we're going to cover some more about the machine translation service specifically in a bit. You want to use a microphone? Sorry. The question is, what is the percentage of accuracy in translation? That is a good question. I'm not 100% sure, but maybe we can talk about that offline. I think
one thing that I will call out is that typically organizations can use this to translate a bunch of content. They can also use this as a first step for human translation. So you might want to send it out to a translation agency for that human touch, especially for marketing content and things like that.
So I'd love to see a show of hands in the room. How many folks have heard about managed navigation this week? Okay, a fair number. So we're going to cover at a high level just what managed navigation is before we jump into how it's integrated into variations. So in the past, when you were setting up your navigation, you would often have to rely on the structure of your site. You might use subwebs to organize your content so you got navigation to look a certain way. In SharePoint 2013, the managed navigation feature actually uses the term store to create a term that backs every page that you create. So the home page in this example has a home term associated with it. Managed navigation also lets you choose the friendly URLs you want to surface. So for example, the 2013 Contoso product innovation, all of these terms are in our demo site, is something that we want to be a top-level nav node. It's something that we want to be in the left nav immediately. But that is a really long URL to send people to. So in the term store, you can change the friendly URL property to be something shorter that's easier to use. So we've changed it to product innovation. And so the URL for this page will be contoso.com/product innovation. So you can see that we don't have slash pages, we don't have .aspx. Managed navigation gives you the ability to really control your URLs. The next thing managed navigation gives you is it gives you the ability to change the structure of your site fairly easily. So I'm just going to organize the rest of the terms here. And so the indented boxes are things that I've said, these are pages that I want to be below those top-level nav nodes. So interact with the cloud should be under a new way of learning. And I just want to emphasize the friendly URL portion here. We had used a modern approach to an ancient game is one of the URLs we have there. That's a really long URL. And so I'd just like to make it modern game, or modern approach. And my URL now becomes contoso.com/product innovation/modern approach. So significantly easier. So in variations. Sure, sorry. So the question is, can I have multiple term sets point to the same page?
We'll get into content reuse a little bit later in the demo.
So for multilingual managed navigation, we have we create a term set for every source and target label that you have. So there will be a source navigation term set, and there will be target term sets for each target you have. The term sets from the source are reused into your target term sets. And one of the things this lets you do is it lets you have flexibility around how each target is organized. So if there is a particular service that is very popular in the United States, but that isn't as popular in France, you may want to not emphasize it as much in the French market. So you might want to move your navigation around. The other thing that we do is we support the translation of not only the terms themselves, but also the friendly, the URL components and the SEO properties. So for example, Bing and your customers may not see this, but Bing and Google are definitely going to be able to see your translated SEO properties. And finally, there's no language packs required to do translation in the term store. It's just out of box. So.
Yes. Actually, let's show you that right now. Yeah. So we're about to do a demo.
Okay, so we're in the term store, and I'm going to look at our authoring site, or the site collection we've been demoing. You can see that we have a variety of different term sets in here. The first one is the variation navigation. This is the source term set. And you can see that we've got product innovation, and we've got a bunch of different terms under here. If I click into this one in particular and go look at the term-driven pages, you'll see that I've customized the friendly URL so that it's shorter than the actual term name itself, so I get that shorter, cleaner URL. And then if I come down here to the FRFR variations navigation, so French France, you can see that I have the same sets of term, I have the same sets of terms down here. But you'll notice that they currently are in English. So if I go back up to the top of the term store and change the language to French, reload, and we're going to go back into FRFR, and you'll see that the terms are available in French.
And I think to answer the gentleman's question, this is not only just for navigation, but you could also do this for tagging term sets, just for general corporate taxonomy.
Definitely. So just going back to our ENUS source page, you'll see that the navigation is over here on the side, and if we click into one of these and look at the URL, you'll see that it's that friendly URL we were mentioning, New Wave Learning, Interact with the Cloud. If I go over to the French website, you'll see that all of the navigation on the left here has been translated, and again, if I click into these, we should see these friendly French URLs. So we're going to dig a bit deeper into translation. So just at a high level, we've done a lot of work around translation in SharePoint 2013, this release. Within variations, we support a variety of file formats. We've talked about the SharePoint fields we support. We saw them through the list demo. We also support the terms and term properties that I've already mentioned. And we've done a bunch of work to support certain file types. So we currently have some parsers built into the product that are able to look at Word docs and text-based documents. Going into machine translation specifically, talking to customers, we've heard a lot of really great feedback around machine translation. People often want to use machine translation as a first pass before they send content out to a human translation company or an in-house localization group they work with. We've added a machine translation service application to SharePoint this release that connects securely to Microsoft Translator and contains a number of parsers to ensure that we maintain file fidelity. A lot of customers have told us that they do a ton of work on their pages, on their Word docs to make them beautiful, and we don't want to lose any of that when we translate their content. The other thing we've done is we've made sure that the machine translation service is extensible. We have a server and client object model that can drive the machine translation operations. And for those of you who are familiar with Microsoft Translator, they have a Microsoft Translator Hub feature where you can sign up and train a custom library specifically for your use that you can now connect to with the machine translation service. So if you've worked with Microsoft Translator to train, say, on medical terminology, and you want to take advantage of that in SharePoint, you can connect to that custom library you've set up with Microsoft Translator.
So from Contoso's perspective, in the past, they've had to build some custom solutions around this. They've, for example, exported things using the content migration pack format. And that was something that XML was generally kind of difficult for translation vendors to go through. And they've also had to just sort of take these exported files and packages and email them or send them to translation vendors. In this case, because we're creating a bunch of extensibility opportunities, they can build custom solutions that would connect these translation packages with vendors.
So we're going to look at a bit more machine translation. So we have a page that we've authored on the source site, but we have not published it yet. So I'm going to publish it, and we're going to variations will pick that up and propagate it to the French France pages list.
So you might be wondering why on the left here you see a number of names that are in English, despite the fact that this is the French site. And so I just wanted to call that out as these are the names, or kind of the file names, or the physical URLs. And in the past, you would have seen this in the URL, something like pages/default or amalgam.aspx. But because we're using the friendly URL feature, like Kate mentioned, those won't actually show up in your URL. You're going to use terms from the managed navigation term set instead. And those do get translated. Now, if for any reason you do want to use physical URLs or fall back to the physical URLs, you can translate these, but that's not supported by the machine translation service. When you translate these, we will still maintain the relationship between the source item and the target item independently of the names of the files. So when you update one, the other will get the updates.
So you've been watching me refresh this page, waiting for variations to send me my page to translate. So it's arrived. I'm going to click into it. Looks great. It's all in English. It hasn't been published yet. I'm just going to go into the variations tab, and I'm going to machine translate this page. And so this is happening synchronously. The machine translation service provides two avenues to translate content. You can either translate synchronously, where you send a single item, and it'll do it in front of your eyes. And we'll talk about the other option in a moment. So there it is. It's all in French. It looks great. I'm going to... And we're going to come back to this, actually, in a minute. Any questions so far? Yeah?
Yes. What about the localization of things like date, time, formatting?
So the question is, what about localization of date, time, and formatting? So Microsoft Translator does handle some of those, but it's always good to double check. Okay, so now we're going to talk about our investments in human translation. So you've probably seen in the variations tab that we have a create translation package button, and what this does is it takes the content that you've selected and puts it into an XLIF file. XLIF is an XML localization interchange file format. It's an open OASIS standard that has been gaining popularity in the localization industry over the last few years. The way XLIF works is it is a one-to-one language mapping. So you always have a source, and when there has been a translation, you have a target. There are a ton of tools on the market that support XLIF. Some of them are open source, and we thought this was a great file format to take advantage of because then it meant customers would be able to connect with large localization vendors or also in-house translators who can use some of these tools. We also have an extensibility story around XLIF. We have server and client OM to drive our export and import operations. We also store all of the XLIF files that are created in a single list at the root of the site collection. So we can absolutely see customers putting an event receiver on that list to detect when a new translation is requested. Finally, we will also put binaries into the XLIF. So it doesn't just have to be a page or a field from SharePoint. You can also put things like Word docs, PowerPoint docs, whatever file format makes sense. We've got a code sample up on MSDN that will take the 64-bit binary encoding we're using and take the file out of the XLIF and put it back into the XLIF once translation has occurred. So we're going to go look at XLIF now. So we're back at our page that we just machine translated. And so machine translation, as we've mentioned, is a great first pass, but it's not necessarily the final translation you want to publish to your customers. So we're going to come in here, and we're going to create a translation package to send to our localization vendor. like machine translation, this is going to, because I'm sending a single item, it's going to offer it to me immediately to download. I'm going to save it, and I'm going to crack it open in Visual Studio. So we have a lovely XLIF file here, and I'm going to go into more details on this once we're back in the slide deck. I've got it pulled out. The other thing I wanted to call out is we've heard from a number of customers that they do localization drops. You know, every week or every month, they have a handoff with a localization company they work with, and you know, your pages library can get gigantic, and you don't want to have to go through and find all of the new pages that have been propagated from your source to your target. So one of the features we added was the ability to ask SharePoint to go through and find all of the items that have yet to be translated. So you can see the two options here in the list view are translate only selected items, the things I've selected, or go find all the untranslated items that I have in here. And so I'm just going to kick that off. That is going to run in a timer job in the background, and it will ask me if I would like to receive an email when my translation package is ready to go. So we're just going to let that run. Any questions? So the question is, are we going to cover kind of the iteration that occurs over time when pages are edited?
One thing that I can note is that we have the version history feature. So you can just go in the past and see kind of a highlighted report of what's changed. That would help you in two ways. One, you can compare the version that you've gotten back from a translation agency with the version that you have from machine translation. The other thing it would let you do is, if you've propagated a version over from the source label, you could also use the View Changes feature, which would give you a highlighted report of what's changed in the source language since the last time I've translated this. And so it helps you make two decisions. One, what do I actually need to send this out for translation? Was it just a punctuation change, or was it something substantive that's important for me? And then two, once I've actually translated it, what changes have or modifications have my agency or my agent made over what I originally had from last time? So no, View Changes has existed in SharePoint 2010, and the version history feature is pretty similar to 2010 as well.
I've used that method before, but just adding in a paragraph or something on a page, is there an easier way now that because assuming that translation package takes the whole page, makes it odd. So besides me going in and copy and pasting those lines with the translator knowing SharePoint, knowing how to use those features, is there a better change?
So the question is, having used those features in the past, you kind of get a block of content and you need to be able to go through, is there something that's a little bit more straightforward? So what we should actually kind of peek at briefly is the XLIF file itself, and I can explain how localizers will be able to take advantage of that. So this is kind of the first half of the XLIF we generate in SharePoint. The thing I want to point out here is the note sections. We really heavily rely on the note field to provide us with information for import. You can see that we're storing a number of GUIDs for each file we create, and this is information that we use to identify where to import the content that is in this XLIF file. So it's something that we absolutely need to have. Going to the second part of the XLIF, the things I want to point out are, you can see that we have a source and a target section in the XLIF. So the source is always going to provide the most up-to-date information from the source. The target will include your last translation. So if, for example, you've had a change where a paragraph has been added or a sentence has been changed, the translator, when you send this to a localization company, will not only have the most up-to-date source, but they will also have the target. Many localization companies have tools that will be able to do matching on this sort of information. The other thing I want to note is we do a lot of HTML masking in our XLIF. And so what this allows localizers to do is if there's emphasis on a word in English that does not make sense in another language and it needs to be moved, the localizer can pick up that section of code and move it around so that they can emphasize the right content or they can apply the right formatting where it makes sense. Oh, yes, question. So the question is, everything we've shown is in the context of variations. Can we use any of this outside of variations, right? So the machine translation service is absolutely available anywhere in SharePoint. The object model can be used outside of variations. There are some out-of-box workflow activities we actually provide if you wanted to build a workflow around machine translation. All of the XLIF functionality is very much integrated into variations. We rely on having a source and target value.
Okay. So let's take a quick recap of where we are right now. So we've talked about things like performance improvements, that you have greater control when you're syncing content. We now support lists and managed navigation. These now fully participate in variations. We've integrated translation, both from machine translation using Microsoft Translator, as well as human translation using this XLIF file format that Kate explained. What we're going to talk about now is going a little bit deeper into how variations fits into this search-driven publishing model, cross-site publishing model that you've heard about through a variety of other sessions. So just as a quick recap of that, and kind of from a multilingual perspective, we have a lot of content, and so content from variations, you know, things like documents, pages, things like list items too, stuff like that. And all that is indexed by search. Now, when you share things out as catalogs, we're going to crawl those in kind of a deeper way. So we're going to say, okay, we'll actually take the rich text formatting of that as well. And the way that those items are tagged will actually impact the navigation hierarchy of the cross-site publishing target or your rendering end site. And so all of that's indexed by search and then is rendered onto a variety of catalog category pages and catalog item detail pages. And so that's kind of, you might only have a few pages on your destination of cross-site publishing that would render all of this content that's being pulled in through search. So in the end, we have this multilingual, multi-channel commerce, or in our case, a publishing site. Okay, so let's do a quick, the base level. So historically, in variations, or kind of the base case for variations, you'd have this English source, and you'd create content there, and that would propagate into your French target in our case. But when we add search-driven publishing, this whole variation site collection is now kind of our authoring environment. So variations is still scoped to a single site collection, but using search for content reuse, you can kind of break outside of those boundaries. So when you nominate a variety of lists or libraries in this site collection as your catalogs, search will then crawl them in this deeper way. And so, like we've probably seen in a variety of other demos, this English US source will be rendered out onto Contosa.com, which is our kind of cross-site publishing target site collection, through this category and item details page. In this case, though, we also have a French site where content there is also rendered into Contosa.fr. As you're creating more variations content in English, it goes down to French in the target, can then be translated, and will then show up on Contosa.fr. So we can show you a quick demo of that, too. Okay, so we're back here on our authoring.contoso.local site. And so you can see from the URL, this is a traditional variations URL. The locale is determined by a subweb or a separate site, some site. And I'm just going to go into the pages library and show you, just for sake of example, there is that A Modern Approach to an Ancient Game page that we've published. So that's here in the English site. When that's published, then search is going to come along and crawl this. This is tagged with a term in our term store that helps categorize it. This is both from an information architecture and organization perspective for us, but this is also enabling us to manage our navigation without having to move pages around or things like that. So I created this page, and it's going to show up here on my research.contoso.com site. So if I find the same place over here, I find the gaming section, we'll see that I have this category page where I then have a modern approach to an ancient game here. If I click into that, I'll see my article rendered at a completely different URL here in the target on my .com site. And the way that it was tagged defines how it shows up in the URL. So also when I published this page, something else happened. So it was picked up by variations and taken over to my French site, where I have that same page. And this is also just sitting in the pages library. When I publish this, search will once again pick up my published translated content. I've translated my term store like Kate showed you. And when we come over here to contoso.fr, I'm now going to see a localized version of my site. So navigation is now localized, and this is all coming from the term store that was translated. And if I go over back here to the gaming category, we'll also see in a moment that the article that I had created is also going to be available. It's not showing up right now, but it is in there. Okay. Let's talk a little bit more about adding some more languages, though.
So I want to go back to our Contoso example from earlier. Josh had mentioned that one of Contoso's goals was to take advantage of the top-level domains, and you can see that we're already starting to do that. Another goal that many customers have expressed is that they don't want to pay for translations that they don't need to make. They want to translate once, and they want it to show up in multiple places. And so we're now going to talk about how you can manage content that is common across multiple locales and have some content that's specific to a given locale. So you can see here that we have the authoring site collection we just looked at that has the ENUS source and the FRFR target. We're now going to add the Canadian content in here. So we have an ENCA target and an FRCA target. And we're going to create contoso.ca. Contoso.ca is going to have a EN pages library. Now, there's some common content that exists on the ENUS source page, like the company history. That is locale agnostic. That applies regardless of which country you're in. But from the ENCA side, the contact us page is absolutely going to be different for the Canadian site. So you can set up your content search web parts to pull Canadian-specific content to override the common American content, and you can have the common American content show up across the board. From the translation side of things, the customers who have told us they don't want to translate things more than once, you can do the same thing. So we're going to create the French Pages library under contoso.ca, and we'll again pull the common content from the FR site, so that company history, which is something we'll translate once in FR, and then we'll pull the Canadian-specific contact us information that has been translated in the FRCA site over as well. And so you could imagine that if Contoso was moving into additional French markets, they could continue to pull that company history page from the FRFR site, and they only have to manage it once, and they only have to translate it once.
Okay. So let's show you that. So I'm here in the authoring.contoso.local site that we just showed you. And there are a ton of pages here. This is, like Kate said, this is where the majority of the English US content is. But there are a few extra pages just for Canada. So here in the US site, I have this machine learning and graphical models page. And this is of particular importance for Canada. It's been localized specifically for English Canada. And so I've created this article, and I kind of want to override that or replace that with one from Canada. And so if we go here to the Canadian site, it's green to show that it's a little bit of a different color, or it's different. So I'm here, and you can see that there are many fewer pages in the pages library, because these are only the pages that we think are unique and specific to Canada. Things like promotions for Canada, store locations, about us, company history for specifically for Canada, things like that. So on this page, we've kind of localized this English content into English-Canadian, changed color to with a U. And we go over here to the machine learning and graphical models page, and we've, just to note that it's a little bit different, we've changed this image. So if you recall back here, we have this kind of Pac-Man looking matrix system, and over here we have this guy who's going to cyberspace. So on the contoso.com site, if you see the URL, we're contoso.com, I'm going to go in and find that page. It's under machine learning. And we can see, okay, hey, it's we have our Pac-Man page here, and it's now available for us. Okay, so that's on contoso.com. Now, if we go to contoso.ca, we'll see that the URL is a little bit different. So in this case, under the CA domain, I have two different variation labels. I have /en/fr, like Kate was talking about. And I'm going to go back into that same area of machine learning. And we'll see that I have the cyberspace guy there. So what's happened in this case is we've overwritten or replaced the content. We're actually consuming content from two different catalogs, kind of fusing them together. So in this case, Contoso has done a little work to say, I'm going to pull in results from two different catalogs. And I've built a display template in this case that says, OK, we're going to promote results from one. And we're going to say, if there are any duplicates, we'll toss out the duplicates if they're not from my current locale. OK, any questions on that? So in this case, a couple of pages have. So my machine learning and graphical models page, the one that was specific to Canada, that one is actually in the Canadian Pages Library over here, because I wanted to make it exclusive to Canada. But for other pages, like, for example, this predictive analytics for traffic, that's actually just universally applicable to all of my English-speaking markets. So I only have one copy of that, and that's just in my English US Pages Library. Yes? Yes. Right. So we don't have any. So as you've called out, this is kind of an area where there could be a lot of business logic as well. And this is an area where you might have a couple of countries that have content that's specific to them. One thing that we don't support in variations is propagating from one peer to another. So I would have, OK, English Canada and English France. English Canada content sent to English France. But what we do support is saying English US, or the English source in this case, we're going to push out to a variety of markets. If this is only for Canada, I would only push it out to CA, ENCA, FRCA. So this is something that we've heard about a lot, kind of the multi-tiered variations. We don't copy the content like that, but using content reuse, you can affect something similar to that. So what I mean is, if I want to translate something into French once, I would send it to the French FR label, and then I would use cross-site publishing and content reuse to render that French content on FRCA, FR Monaco, things like that. Other questions? Awesome. OK, so at this point then, we'd like to say, if you have additional questions, we will all be available at Ask the Experts. But I'd like to go, this is kind of the summation of all of what's new in variations. And yeah, please let us know if you have any questions. Thank you for coming. We'd love some feedback. Yes, sir. If you could use the microphone, that would be awesome.
You commented that this is available now in Office 365.
Make sure that we're all
is it also available in dedicated?
Sorry?
Is it also available in dedicated?
Oh, in dedicated, yes. Yes.
Still with the 50 label limit?
The 50 label limit, that's actually an excellent question. I'd like to follow up with you on that. That's something that I don't have information on right now. You could just, I can give you my card.
We'd certainly do questions if you want. Is it something specific?
What about the language selector, the language speaker implementation?
Sorry?
What about the language selector implementation?
Ah, yes. Actually, that's a great question. So this is something that some others may be interested in as well. So in the past, SharePoint 2007, SharePoint 2010, we've gotten a ton of feedback about, hey, I need a language selector. Oftentimes, a lot of sites will have a bar at the top that says, hey, if I ended up on Hungarian, and I don't actually speak Hungarian, how do I get to the French site? In this case, we've actually added a code sample that says, OK, we've added some variations, OM, that you can call and say, for any page, give me that page's peer in the relationships list. And so that's something that's available to you. It's not a control that we ship out of the box, but because we know people want to style it themselves, we have OM so you could build that control. Yes.
I'll make sure we can give you contact.
Yeah?
Can you point the translator at the newsfeed in 2013?
Can you point the translator at the what?
Newsfeed.
Newsfeed. Unfortunately, not right now.
Is that in the roadmap?
Well, sorry. Coming back online. So, your question was, can you apply it to the newsfeed?
Yes.
There's nothing out of box right now, but if you wanted to take advantage of machine translation, I'm sure there's a way you could build a solution around that.
Is it something that's going to be in your development roadmap?
Sorry?
Will it be in your development roadmap in the future?
It's something that we can't comment
speak
on.
Speak to that right now, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah?
My company has never actually used the variations, but we've used content deployment a lot. Is the propagation related to content deployment? Does it use content deployment? Is it completely separate?
So it's pretty separate. I'll tell you how it's similar and how it's different. And I'll tell you how that fits into search-driven publishing. So content deployment is a feature that I've worked on for a while. Content deployment uses the content migration API. And that's actually the same API that the variations feature uses to replicate content and push it around. So under the covers, there is some similarity there. But from a user perspective, content deployment is kind of for a different scenario. Content deployment is saying, I want to get content from an authoring environment to production, whereas variations is around, I want to localize that within a single site collection. One other thing that I'll note, though, the demo that you saw us do had kind of an authoring site and a rendering site. We used no content deployment. In this case, we were using the cross-site publishing feature to reuse content instead of actually copying it and having duplicate copies, things like that. So this should be a scenario where you may no longer need to use content deployment.
Yeah, we just moved off of content deployment for 2010. And I was like, I don't want to ever go back to content deployment. And then let me think about how to phrase
okay,
that.
Okay, sure. Do we have another question over here, sir?
Quick one on the multi-language part that you're doing with the Canadian site. Is that something that's fairly easy to configure with query rules, or?
So there are a couple of things that you should do here. So there is some level of custom code that you need to write with your display template. That's one way that you could do this. But there's this feature called XRank with search that enables you to say, okay, if the original path of the stuff that I'm getting from search comes from the ENCA label or the FRCA label, I could do some logic to say, if I have something from ENCA and I have something from ENUS and I'm on the ENCA site, toss out the ENUS one from results so that users are being directed to the ENCA one. And then always promote results from ENCA. So that's something that you should be able to do with some simple display template work and query rules. Yeah?
So with the propagation using the same API, do you ever encounter issues with versions of documents between publishing, or?
Can't really comment on specific issues that nothing really comes to mind, but yeah.
Okay, because I know we broke content deployment a whole bunch of times by deleting a document and then republishing it.
So two things that I'll note, though. We have made significant stability improvements specifically to the variations feature.
Yep.
And two, we are much more reentrant than we have been in the past.
Perfect.
So instead of doing some sort of massive operations, we've broken it down into much more manageable chunks.
Great, thank you.
Yep. Sir.
Early on in your demonstration, when you had the stuff in English and then you had a French page, it seemed like the text came into English on the French page right away.
Absolutely. Well, let me clarify and let me make sure this answers your question. So are you saying, why is it the case that when I published an English page, it showed up on my French site in English to begin with?
I was hoping a workflow would kick off to somebody else saying, hey, someone's updated the content in English. Please, you're the French person. Now change it before anyone else sees it.
So a couple things to mention there. One, we had major minor versioning enabled, which is enabled by default. So that was a draft version that users of your site, you know, anonymous users, general consumers would not be able to see. That's
okay.
Only for authenticated users. The other thing that I'll note is Variations actually does support a very basic email-based workflow that would say, okay, when I publish a page and Variations pushes it over, you can notify someone, hey, this has changed. We have the idea of a label contact, who's sort of the person who gets these emails and says, hey, this is available for translation.
So but would it stop it from showing up for authenticated and anonymous people? Because I don't want it to be seen by anybody until it has been done in language.
So let me explain something else. So we have the ability to opt into translations. We're talking about that sort of distributed control model where users could say, okay, I only want changes when they're important for me. you could say, okay, people with certain permissions, the page won't be copied over originally, as soon as it's published in the source, the page won't be copied to the target. You'll simply get an email notification saying, hey, the source page has been updated. Would you like to copy it over? And then you can go into the UI and say, okay, I actually do want to copy it over, and then authenticated users would see the untranslated version. Do you see what I mean?
I'm trying to, why would you not, I guess I don't want anybody, I mean, if you're French, you shouldn't be seeing the English stuff until someone's translated. Does that make sense? So there's a way to stop that.
So I think the distributed control model that Josh is mentioning probably makes sense for your scenario.
Okay.
If you have someone on the French site who is your designated translator,
right.
You could list them as the label owner, and then they would get an email every time something is changed on the source. That person could then go evaluate that content and say, oh, this is relevant. I will copy it over, and I will immediately translate it.
Okay. It doesn't go live until they do the translation.
That's right.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem.
Okay. So one of the examples you did, the machine translation from the English to French, the page list.
Mm-hmm.
It converted all columns to French, including the status column, right?
Can you take this one?
So there's a feature from Variations that we've updated in 2013 mm-hmm. called translatable columns.
Okay.
And so you can set at a label level, common columns across the label that you want to have translated at all times. So they would always go to machine translation. They would always go into the XLIF. You can also, if you've added a custom column at a list level, so you've got a specific column on the pages library that you want to also send out, mm-hmm. you can designate that at the list level as well.
Okay, that was the question.
Okay.
Basically, because if I, for example, in this scenario, in this architecture, if I put some criteria in my search web part, specifically looking in that one of the columns, status, mm-hmm. by matching with a string, if it translates to French, it's not going to match, it's not going to work.
Yeah, right? No, you can definitely set those.
Okay.
And we have a number of smart, like, out-of-box defaults, so like the title of the page, mm-hmm. the publishing HTML. We have a few that are set by default, but you can absolutely go change any of those.
Mm-hmm. This is one small change that might also be interesting to you. In the past, Variations propagated most columns, but not all columns. And we've gotten a lot of feedback on specifically title, where if you update the title of the source page, in SharePoint 2010, we would not propagate that to the target. But in SharePoint 2013, just simply because we thought that's something that doesn't typically change, a lot of customer feedback was, we actually do think that's important for targets to update as well, so we do propagate that column.
One additional question. So if I'm using managed metadata for tagging the contents, that tags also translated?
So the way the managed navigation is mm-hmm. set up is if you're using it as a managed metadata field to tag, it's mm-hmm. it's actually backed by an ID. So the language okay. that is shown does not impact the term itself. It's still the same term.
Got it.
Does that make sense?
Yep. Thanks.
No problem.
I want to expose my site to the internet, and I don't want to allow any authentication. I want it to be anonymous. So can I use also content deployment on top of that?
So can you repeat the question?
The site, contoso.com, contoso.ca, I want to expose it to the internet without any authentication. I don't want to
Absolutely.
Allow any authentication.
Right.
Can I use content deployment for that area?
So in this case, we're actually taking more of a author-in-place model, where our contoso.com and authoring.contoso.local could all be kind of in one environment. But you could also say, okay, I have authoring.contoso.local on another environment, and contoso.com on another environment. We're not using content deployment in that case. We actually just have a search farm that's shared between the two of them. Is indexing content in authoring.contoso.local and is rendering that content on research.contoso.com. So content deployment is not in that picture at all.
Seth, did you have something specific?
Can you do it?
Yes, please.
Well,
oh, would you like to get up there?
Yeah, that's on the
Right.
I actually work for a website that doesn't do translation. Instead, they hire another website that's a proxy that does the translation for us. However, we do have content that's specific to different regions. Mm-hmm. So we might have like site.com/Sweden, site.com/US. Would we be able to publish content specific to those regions? And would we be able to do that without repeating work? So one bit of content might go to two sites, whereas another bit of content might go to these three different regions.
So through cross-site publishing and content reuse, you should be able to affect something like that, where you're merging results from a variety of different countries that roll up into a single region. I think that was your scenario?
Yeah. And one more question. Would we be able to choose the sort of URL for that? So could we do site.com/Sweden rather than site.com/Sweden-en?
Oh, I see what you mean. So you could have, you know, site.com/, where Sweden in this case is now a subweb or variations label that's pulling in content from some other site or some other site collection.
Right.
So you have a lot more flexibility around the URLs in that perspective.
Okay, so we can do that specifically.
The ENUS that we often have is something that's just auto-generated, but you can change it.
Okay.
Yeah? I have a question regarding the pages library on the right.
Sure.
So so you have the translated content on the left. So on the right, are you setting up each and every page and putting a content search bar part? That was not clear to me.
No. So on the right, it's not like you have to create one page for every page that you have on the left. On the left, you have, you know, maybe hundreds of pages that's all of your content. You could run this whole site with just one page or two pages on the right. Those two pages would be, well, maybe your home page, your category page that says, okay, here are all things that are tagged with business cases. Here are all things that are tagged with, it's a single page that based on different terms that are passed into it will render different content. It's kind of a dynamic page. And then the items detail page will say, here's a particular article or leaf or item that I'm rendering. So while you have one page in the pages library, it actually renders a bunch of different content based on the search context that's passed into it. So there should not be significant management overhead on the right side, because it's really just those are kind of rendering endpoints. They're windows into your content.
So you set that up again separately for each of the countries, right?
But yes, right. So if I had contoso.fr and contoso.de, I would have to set up those site collections individually. Some of that is scriptable, but those would be discrete site collections.
Because my, sorry.
Sir, go ahead.
From what I have used variations in the past, with variations you also inherit the hierarchy.
Right, so variations will replicate certain subwebs. You could certainly set up variations in such a way that subwebs aren't automatically replicated. So you could opt into replicating some but not others. But that hierarchy of subwebs is not represented on the right side in this case, because that's kind of invisible to search as far as we're concerned. We're just pulling items from lists that you've nominated as catalogs.
Thanks.
Yep.
As a content translator, how do I identify which parts of the page has changed since the last version?
So sorry, the question is, as a localizer, how do you find what's been translated since the last time?
What's changed?
Yeah. So the XLIF breaks everything up by the way we break up the XLIF is actually mapped back to kind of the way SharePoint is structured. So for every field, you get a different transunit. And so within each transunit, you'll have a source and a target if it has been previously translated. So you might have things like the page title, which is max 255 characters, and you would have a single source, single target. Pretty straightforward. For things like the publishing HTML, where the content could be fairly large, we do not break that content up in any way because we wanted to store all the information about the publishing HTML in a single block, so people kind of knew they mapped to one another. There are some of the some of the XLIP tools on the market do kind of help do that matching where you can say, oh, these map up and these map up. But we haven't provided a solution for that particular space.
So I have a feature request, and that would be to have similar functionality as tracking changes in Word. That would be wonderful, but without having to also export XLIF packages, because maybe you want to translate.
You want to do it within SharePoint?
Yeah.
As you said earlier, the person who's doing the translation, if they're in SharePoint, you can use the version as the thing that will show you the changes.
It will.
But that's if the translator knows SharePoint.
Okay.
The feedback was typically translators have translation memory that would help with that.
Thank you.
Yep. Sir?
I just want to make sure I understood the example. So to do this, you didn't actually have to install the French language pack, and you would have had these variation capabilities?
So what we did in this case, you didn't have to install the French language pack on the authoring site collection, purely using variations. But in our case, we did install the language pack on the contoso.fr site for a couple of reasons. One, we wanted a couple of out-of-the-box web parts, like the search box, that just use the language pack files that we had. And two, the term property web part, for example, will pull things based on the language pack. But for the majority of content, you don't need the language pack, but for some cases, you do.
And I guess related to that, you would probably have installed the French language pack to get the authoring experience in French if they wanted to switch the MUI.
So you could install that, but it does not necessarily need to be the language in which the site was provisioned. Right. That could just be an alternate language that's on top of that.
But in this model, probably as a French author or French translator, they would go in with the French language pack installed. They'd have the MUI option.
Yes,
correct.
So
absolutely.
They'd see all that. I mean, your text was all in English, but they would actually be able to see that in French.
Yes. Yep.
Okay, thank you.
With the search-driven, you know, front end to the site, don't you potentially run into issues where you don't have strong control over preview? Or maybe you tag something that goes into the marketing section and it gets indexed and your index isn't run for 10 minutes and you try to take it out but it's still in search. Is there something to kind of preview or prevent, you know, that scenario?
A couple of things that you could do in this case. You could render into a variety of other pages. We still have the draft model, right? So the content that you have that you haven't published yet is still visible to you. But it's not like there is some sort of additional approval workflow after you've published before that would get picked up by search.
Okay. And then just, you know, general is, like, so now when do you use language packs? You know, just kind of the...
Language packs are most important for the authenticated users. From my perspective, for authenticated users being able to see SharePoint UI in the language that they prefer.
The other thing that comes with language packs, you get things like the spellers and the right. word breakers, which are things that are important for people who are authoring in that particular language and also for search.
Yep. One other thing to keep in mind with spellers and word breakers, typically language packs will have a couple of spellers, spell check dictionaries available in that single language pack.
And does Office 365 have all the language packs installed?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Sir?
So I'm wondering if you can make the translation server available to the end user. Instead of managing a taxonomy like this in multiple languages, if you just create your content in English and give a translate this type feature to the user on request.
We have object model for the machine translation service. So if you wanted to create a custom solution that did something like that, I think it's possible.
I'm not quite clear that when you talk about the licensing for their Office Online SharePoint, is this is cost additional or does this come with the
machine translation service specifically? So I'm not completely familiar with the model there. The Microsoft Translator website has a ton of content where they explain how you could take advantage of the custom libraries or how their model works.
Please.
Oh, did you?
Sweet. So up to, I believe, 1,000 translations a day, you are not throttled, and the service is free for use. And then after that, you may get throttled based on that excessive usage. So your translations go slower. instead of as fast. You should go to the Machine Translator Hub site, and they have the terms of service outlined there as well.
Great, thank you. Thanks. How many languages does the translator know? Last question.
It's available in the Microsoft Translator site.
They list a bunch of them. They're adding languages on a very regular basis, and the Machine Translation Service is actually set up to crawl those and return them, so you will see an ever-growing list of translation languages over time.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, if anyone else has specific questions, yes, one last one, because we can take them in person, too. Sorry, can you ask that one more time? Let me make one distinction. So all of the variation-specific functionality is available in Office 365. The thing that's not available in Office 365 is the search-driven publishing model. Sorry? Yes, this part, but move back. Yes, this part.
Thank you very much for